This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes, Chris Novembrino, along with me. I am Jeff Hawkins. Chris telling me all about his great love life and
yeah,
Good Friday. Go get some Jesus, Chris. No,
I might have found God, Hawkins.
Twitter's still alive. I'm kind of upset by that. I'm hoping it had been bought and killed by now, but it's not.
I know it's such a shame. You know, this wonderful billionaire had a great opportunity to do fantastic good in the world today.
Really? Well, actually, he couldn't buy it today because the markets were closed. Monday, perhaps he'll buy it. I'm hopeful. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, that makes one of us. But you know, let us all root for our boy Elon Musk.
Yes.
A great man.
Oh. Leading off the news this week, Shinjiro Otani remains paralyzed after taking a German suplex into the turnbuckle in a match with Takashi Segura on April 10th at Sumo Hall. Otani was diagnosed with a cervical spinal cord injury that has left him paralyzed. He was in intensive care, remained conscious throughout the ordeal, and can speak, but he underwent spinal cord surgery on the 13th to attempt to prevent further deterioration. Otani has been acting president of Zero One since 2007 over in Japan, but for me and my fandom, he's part of that. When I started getting into international wrestling in like the early to mid 90s, he's part of that golden age of New Japan junior heavyweight wrestling, where you'd have, you know, Jushin Liger, Eddie Guerrero as Black Tiger, Wild Pegasus, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Finlay, Koji Kanemoto, those types there. He was also in a lot of the WCW New Japan crossover cards that happened. His most famous match in WCW would be 95 Starrcade, where he and Eddie Guerrero had a match. That was really, really good. Not sure about your international flavor, Chris, but do you have any Shinji Otani?
Yeah, so Otani for me is a guy that I got hipped to by getting a cartridge of Virtual Pro Wrestling 2.
Okay.
And then I sort of retroactively had to go and learn about him. I mean, that's how I learned about Shinya Hashimoto. Yeah. Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 for me was a big portal into all these guys where I was like, okay, but who is this dude? And then I would go and like look him up on YouTube. That's how I learned.
Shinya Hashimoto, I went down a rabbit hole of him today because of the whole 01 thing, because it was him and Otani who broke off of New Japan to form 01. And not to get off the subject too much, but boy, you want to have some fun, go watch some Shinya Hashimoto matches, kids. Big dude who can move. I'm into those.
For me, it's just a testimony to what a quality wrestling video game can do to inform somebody about the various people inside the industry, especially who are maybe not getting as much television time.
Interesting you say that. This is a bit of a non sequitur as well, but over in the PlayStation Store, WWE 2K22 already marked down for sale. Not hugely, but. And then you take a look at the downloadable content packet, and it's not really wrestlers. I think the only real, I think Cactus Jack's on there. I think Xia Li's on there, but it's like Mr. T, Logan Paul, Machine Gun Kelly. You know, it's all these celebrities that you can play.
At this point, that's kind of what WWE really needs to make, is essentially a WWE version of Celebrity Deathmatch, for those of you who remember that, where you just get various celebrities to agree to get a WWE version of themselves made, and that's what the WWE product is.
Well, you know what, one of the more popular wrestling franchises that wasn't a wrestling franchise was a Def Jam Vendetta, which started out as a wrestling game.
Well, yeah, and that's a wrestling franchise that's built on the THQ. Well, it's built on that AKI engine. I mean, it's very much an inheritor to No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000 for those of you who played those games on the N64.
Yeah, no, I...
And they're good. Those Death Van Vendetta games are fun.
Yeah, they are a lot. And it's like, well, why don't you just remake something like that again and make it fun? But no, we have to have like training mode where.
Well, and I think the worst part too is these story modes and these federation modes are not very good now. That's what a lot of people want. People want good storylines. And unfortunately, like WWE would almost need to outsource to a completely different writing team for the video games, because to try to copy the storylines that they're using on TV will always result in a boring video game that has attention deficit issues.
I really want a really realistic WWE game
where the storylines just get dropped. Like, you're going for the Intercontinental title one week and you're like 3 weeks along in the program, and for no reason now that program's been cut short and you don't really know why.
No, I mean, even worse, like you're getting buried because you're only like 6'2 instead of 6'5. One day you log in and your name's been completely changed and you have to meet with the producer. It's like, yeah, you no longer have a first name anymore. You're now just known as Babalu or whatever it is. And you have to deal with that. You're about to go out on stage and your time's cut by 2 minutes.
Your character gets repackaged with a random ethnic gimmick.
Yes. You appear to be Italian.
So what I'm thinking here, boss, is that you're going to be a ninja.
Yeah, that's what we want. That's what every child wants in a video game, is office politics.
Anyway. Characters with dark enough skin get de-pushed randomly. No.
Vince has decided you're too ethnic. Oh my goodness. We're already off the rails. We're not even 10 minutes into the show. Back to it. WWE officially announced its biggest UK event in 30 years, a show as yet unnamed that will be a pay-per-view on September 3rd from Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales. Show will take place on a Saturday afternoon US time, hours earlier than a usual pay-per-view. It will be the same weekend as AEW's All Out show, but that show will be the next day. There's been talk of the two shows taking place on the same day, as WWE had either listed September 3rd or 4th as the date for the UK state show earlier this year. Now, this should be interesting. I'm wondering, because there are stadium shows, there are two stadium shows in July alone. There's one for, I believe, I want to say October. Don't quote me on that. And then there's the Saudi Arabia show. I am wondering, because WWE famously half-asses it on UK shows, I'm wondering if they're going to do a stadium show, announce as a stadium show, and actually deliver on a stadium show here, number one. Number two, I'm wondering if they even bother to put any NXT UK talent on this show. My thought was it would be great to do something like Mustache Mountain versus the Usos as an opener and burn down the house on this thing. But I could also see internal thinking being, well, no, they're paying for a WWE show. They want the main roster. They don't want the guys that were trying to grow in the UK on this. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of what you say is really interesting there. I had one question. What is NXT UK?
It's a show that pops up on Peacock on Thursdays that we used to watch religiously, and now I watch it for the wild boar Mike Hitchman, mostly. As we wait for Rampage Brown to come back from his injury.
Huh.
You know, let me ask you something. Do you know who the NXT UK champion is?
It's still Ilya Dragunov. That's but they correct. Have they changed his name to something else?
No, they have not. Russian Miss Ruski, come on.
No, man. If anything, I would expect them to like move away from that right now.
We're going to call you Nikita Koloff.
I know. No, they did move away from Torpedo Moscow. I know that much. Yeah.
Do you know who the NXT Heritage Cup champion is?
It is Noam Dar.
That is correct.
Nice.
Do you know who the NXT UK Women's Champion is?
Oh, it's Mako Setamore.
That is also correct. She is,
yes!
She is currently in the midst of, of a 13-month feud with Isla Dawn. And now for all
unbelievable.
The marbles, for the clean sweep, who are the NXT UK Tag Team Champions?
This is tough. This is tough. Because it was pretty deadly.
Yes.
But who did they drop the belts to? Is it Mustache Mountain?
You are correct, sir.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Who are the NXT UK champions on this given day?
Feels good.
How does it feel to have so much useless knowledge about wrestling?
Jeff, I got to tell you something. When I was growing up as a young boy on the streets of Longmeadow, Massachusetts, I had a couple of dreams. One of them was to get one of those Mr. Conehead Sundays down at Friendly's. I achieved that dream at the ripe young age of 6 years old. But the other one was to successfully name the roster on a wrestling program I do not watch anymore.
The Dirty Daddy, Chris Dickinson, has signed a contract with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Good for him. Are you aware of this man's work at all, Chris?
I am not familiar with the Dirty Daddy.
He is he was an Evolve staple for a long, long time. He did a catch point for a while. The stadium or the stable within Evolve that had Riddle.
And Drew Gulak
and whatnot too. No, he was a tag team champion for a while with I had his name on the top of my tongue, but I can't remember. I know Fred Yehi was in there, but that wasn't him. It was never mind. Can't remember. Gotta move on before I draw this out any longer.
I'm still flying high on this clean sweep of the NXT UK roster. No, I don't know that I'll ever come down.
Pat Buckridge, aka Pat Buck, who quit WWE as a producer the day after WrestleMania, stating he wanted to spend more time with his family, which is a true statement, started as a producer at AEW on Wednesday night. Much easier schedule to do, but this is now the second time this has happened where a guy asked for his release as a producer from WWE and walked right into AEW, Sanjay Dutt being the other one.
I mean, you got to imagine, especially on the production and writing and ideas side, there are a lot of people who are frustrated and who are probably quietly banking ideas that WWE is not utilizing. One of the things we don't really discuss or hasn't been something to discuss in years past with frustrated backstage talents is so you have these different ideas for storylines and that sort of thing. But like, if you can't do them at WWE, where are you going to do them? Well, now there is another company where you can actually do some of these storylines and ideas, and there are a bunch of guys who are probably banking ideas and have thoughts about what they would like to do if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm interested because like producers are being are really going through the revolving door over at WWE right now. Like Arya Daivari's now backstage. He was producing matches this past week. And also Curtis Axel came in as a producer for a week. So it's interesting what's going on right now. I would think Axel would be trying to find somewhere on the indies to work, but I guess, you know, once you're in a system for a while and you know the system, maybe that groove on that couch is a little too comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. Doesn't he already have a family and stuff too? So maybe he's just looking for the steady paycheck and not trying to build out the family name.
Yeah.
I mean, also maybe he can hit up Cody Rhodes and be like, I too also have a daddy remembered fondly.
I believe he was part of that stable too, wasn't he?
No, he was not part of that stable.
Orton, DiBiase. It was just DiBiase and Rhodes.
Okay, yeah.
You're right. I was saying the Fortunate Sons, which was a Florida Championship prior to NXT stable, which had like, I think it had two DiBiases in there and it had a couple other second generation wrestlers. Oh, and we had Snuka's other kid, I think, was that he was in the stable for like a week and got kicked out on Raw as part of that Orton stable. Came back later as a cameraman. He was the cameraman who Undertaker crashed into during the Shawn Michaels match or Triple H match. I can't remember which one it was, but he was the guy who had to take the bump for that. But he lasted 1 week in that Orton stable. I remember that. Anyways. And what was the funniest news of the week? Austin Theory is now just Theory. Dropping the Austin name. Raul Mendoza is now Cruz del Toro. They just started calling him that on the show this week with no explanation whatsoever. The story behind this is that talent got a memo and Vince McMahon decreed he doesn't want anyone using their real names anymore, nor should they be using names that they've used before on the indie scene. Now, we all thought as a joke, it might've been just the line at WrestleMania, Austin stuns Austin, and we could keep up with that. So they might have dropped, but no, instead, Vince is just having one of his 2010 spells where he breaks up tag teams randomly and now no longer wants you to use his real name, use real names. But a bevy of talent, as you've seen on the TV, have had their names changed. Walter became Gunther. Raquel Gonzalez is now Raquel
Rodriguez.
Rodriguez. My joke was, Vince preferred Speedy Gonzalez or preferred Slowpoke Rodriguez to Speedy Gonzalez when he was watching cartoons. But that's just a weird thing. Marcel Bartel, of course, is now Ludwig. What's his last name?
Kaiser.
Ludwig Kaiser. Thank you very much. Yeah. I don't think anybody currently on the main roster is going to get that big of a change, although you never know. But it does explain now also why Pete Dunne is now Butch, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's also just because Butch is a dynamite name.
Oh, yeah. Really is.
World champion Butch. You know what I mean? You could see Roman Reigns and Butch at a main event of WrestleMania, any city in the country.
Who's the champion now? Butch?
Butch.
The Bushwhacker? No, that's Bushwhacker Butch, Jeff.
We're just talking about Butch. We're just talking about Butch.
Just talking about Butch. Yes. I hate this move by them always. And personally, I'd love it if more wrestlers trademarked their name and then tried to make a deal to sell the trademark or lend the trademark to WWE and then just leave if they say no. But I know you can't turn down that much money a lot of times, but now they're going to be changing names mid NXT and doing that. That just seems, how are you supposed to build a fan base when you don't explain these things on your actual?
No, it insults your fan base to change these names because these people who are still watching this show with any reliability know who Legado del Fantasma are. Know who the members of Legado del Fantasma are and are going to find it weird that Raul Mendoza is now Cruz del Toro in the same way that even the house audience found it weird that Walter was now Gunter and they eventually just got apathetic and stopped caring. But like, you also see that Gunter's just less hot of an act than Walter was.
Yeah. And let me ask you this because it seems logical to me, but remember, logic does not dictate success in WWE in any way, shape, or form. But the whole point of putting NXT on USA television, in addition to trying to go head-to-head with AEW, is so that fans of the WWE can start learning who this next generation of talent is. And then when they get called up to the main roster, they'll have an established fan base of some kind who know whether to cheer or boo, know who these people are and can explain them to the seatmates who are probably just there wondering if the Dudleys are going to be there to break tables. Does this seem logical to you at all?
Yeah, but I think it just gets back to this core question for NXT, which is like, who And what is NXT for now? It's like a fundamental question you'd ask in marketing. And I feel like it's never posited with regards to NXT. Right. What is this show for? Who is it for? Who is the audience? And it, one possible route would be conditioning your diehards to know who these people are for when they get called up to the main roster. But if anything, you are teaching your diehards that there's this place where like people get these random scrub names that will eventually get dropped. And so you could just kind of see stuff happen.
Okay, but they actually do market it like this. If I recall correctly, they market NXT 2.0 as go here to see the next generation of WWE superstars. Am I wrong on that?
I think so, but I mean, if they don't end up having the names that they're going to have on the next roster, it's like these aren't. Is that what that is? I, you know,
Braun Breaker. We're bringing you up as Scrubzo Magoo.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't see Braun Breaker as a name that's going to hold when he gets called up to the main roster. It seems like eventually they're going to have to cut the shit and go with the Steiner last name.
I think it does stick. I think that's the one that does stick. Well, everybody like Braun is a strong name and Breaker, you know, you break things.
Well, you know, a good strong name is like strong man. You could shorten it up because the G doesn't, it's a little clunky, like a straw man. Strowman?
Chompa, we're going to call you Chomper. You're going to bite people.
Tommy Chompers.
And do this, whenever you're talking, and then he'll be good.
He does the Pac-Man hand. That's like sort of his gimmick as he comes to the ring.
Oh, we kid because we care, kids. But yes, one Tommaso Ciampa, or he might just be going by Ciampa. I'm not particularly certain. I haven't checked the roster.
Tommy Chompers is still Tommy available.
Thomas Penmanship, also still available. His first the first name he had when he appeared as Muhammad Hassan's attorney on SmackDown. That's also available. But yes, he made his debut on Raw this past week. Also making their debut this week, Roxy, the former Ring of Honor Women's Champion, now known as Roxanne. She'll be on NXT Level Up tonight. You'll be hearing this afterwards, so you missed it. You go back and watch it. But yes, Roxanne. One word. Chris, you know what I want her finisher to be, don't you?
The red light?
The red light. No, Rox. Roxanne, you don't have to put on.
No, it's got to be a devastating submission hold that, yeah. Like, the announce team begs her not to put on people.
Roxanne has put on the red light again. Yeah, it's the ultimate dad joke, and I apologize for ever making it on Twitter, but I did. Numbers for this week: AEW Dynamite 977,000, 0.37 in the demo, 486,000 total. NXT 610,000 and 0.12. SmackDown last week Friday 2.23 million, 18 to 49, 0.60. That's 788,000 in the demo. Rampage from last week 600 even. 18 to 49, 0.25, 328,000, a little bit over 50%. And then Raw on Monday night, 1.8 million viewers, 18 to 49, 0.54. So holding up pretty good, well, in the midst of playoff basketball, the Masters, all those other things. Anything stand out there to you at all, Chris?
You know, just the, I guess, Rampage and NXT are basically analogs for one another at this point, which is maybe not a great sign for Rampage considering what they put on Rampage.
Well, here's where you will get the pushback, because I believe AEW was third overall in quote unquote sports for the week. If you classify it as sports in cable, they double up NXT in the demo. Rampage does, or not, I'm sorry, I was thinking Dynamite, sorry about the third on cable. Rampage gets 600,000 viewers, but they double up in the prestigious 18 to 49 youth vote. So it's still more of a youth oriented show. And apparently they did a lot better on Rampage with women due to Mox and Yuta being the draw, I guess.
But I just think people really undervalue these 50 and ups who care about the future of wrestling in the World Wrestling Entertainment Company.
Well,
Jeff,
okay, hold on. In defense of the old, which
they buy stuff too.
They have more money than the young people. To be honest with you, they have more disposable income. I know that it used to be that you'd say 18 to 32 had all the income, but as a matter of fact, it's the people who save their money who probably have all the income, especially in this day and age. I don't know.
Well, you know, hard to save money when you never get a chance to make it between 18 to 32. But yeah.
Make better decisions.
Okay, Jeff.
Look, I didn't make money for a while either, so, you know, whatever. I don't know, man. Is this Rampage? I really liked Rampage tonight, for example. But is it just a show to put on, or does it actually grow the audience for the main show? Or is it AEW Thunder? I'm still wondering these things in my head, Chris.
Yeah, I don't know. And this title match left me kind of thinking about that same question, right? Like, was that a title match that's like a A-level title match, or was that more of a B-level title match?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was enjoyable, but like felt a little rushed. All the extreme-y parts felt like they were gotten to very, very quickly. The commercial break, I think, hurt continuity. And that's not the level of a title match that you'd expect them to even run on Dynamite, let alone on a pay-per-view level. And I think that sort of thing signals to an audience that this is just not an essential show.
Interesting. We use that to parlay into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Anything we've watched from any decade, any sort of any territory, any country, what have you, we'll talk about here, but we'll also talk about what we liked, what we didn't like on the stateside shows. Chris, I will start this week, and I will ask the question on week two now of the Cody Rhodes experiment. Are they getting it right? And I will posit that they are in many, many ways. What say you?
I think he is the best option they've got right now for a main event program. And I think that it's working. I mean,
is it fantastic? No, but it's working.
And then I'm also stopping myself a little bit there because I do sort of get this vibe that the crowd's cooling on him a little.
Well, I
guess I want to see more data, but I thought week two, there was like a couple of lines in some of those promos or the promo that he did this week where the crowd didn't really get on it the way he needed them to.
Yeah, it's not as hot as a post-Mania Raw crowd. And so the cooling, I think, is going to be natural. I've said it, and I know other people have said, so this is not a new point, but it feels very much like Cody Rhodes is doing Earth 3 Chris Jericho in AEW. Whereas Jericho is the sports entertainer in the wrestling company, Cody Rhodes is acting like the wrestler in the sports entertainment company. I think his promos are still pretty solid. I think I'm going to want to see tougher Cody Rhodes, ass kicker Cody Rhodes. Don't get me wrong, quality suit Cody Rhodes playing kind of a semi Ric Flair type of thing. I dig it. Don't get me wrong.
Maybe that's the issue for me. So we've seen decent promo work, but the blocking is the thing that I'm going to be thinking about. Like, how do they actually use this guy in matches? How do they tell stories with him? Or do they fall into the same WWE tropes with Cody? And I mean, my money's always on that.
If I had to place bets as a betting man, I would say Cody will not take the big belt from Roman. I still think this is a land of giants. I still think they're waiting for the next big thing. Not Brock Lesnar, but just who's the guy we can use this to propel. I do think Cody probably gets the second belt, though. Whatever that may be, whatever they choose it to be backstage. Usually it would be the one on SmackDown, but given that SmackDown has a bigger audience and is on network television, that focus may change sooner than later. And I don't know about that, but for right now, I think they haven't blown it yet. Let's be perfectly clear. He didn't come out and like say suffer and succotash or something like that.
Oh no, it hasn't. No, nothing's been blown. And I mean, in a way, every week where that doesn't happen, where you can say that sort of strongly, is a good week for them.
Yeah. Your turn.
My turn. I even though it was kind of thrown together and you could feel that, I enjoyed the CM Punk and Penta Oscuro match.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that Penta didn't fall into a lot of the same Penta spots and a lot of the same Penta patterns, that like the match with Punk forced him to have a more straight ahead match. I found that refreshing. It was a good reminder that Penta can do things other than his WWE version of self.
Okay, I need to go back and rewatch it then. Because on Wednesday night, after just my hot take, was I didn't enjoy it. I didn't think they gelled. I didn't think they had much chemistry together. But I might be wrong on that.
No, so, I mean, you might be right on that. I might need to rewatch on that front. I think I like the fact that Penta didn't, because they maybe didn't have chemistry, Penta had to actually do something different for a change.
Okay.
We've been getting a lot of the same Penta. You know, yes, what I'm talking
about. We've been getting sports entertainment Penta.
Right. And I just thought that this, I mean, even if there was a bit of struggle, I thought that the struggle was more interesting and compelling than the standard Penta match has been in a while.
Okay, cool. I am going to make a declaration right now. There is no way, and I haven't been following the spoilers for Battle of the Belts, but there's no way we can belt Marina Shafir beating Jade Cargill, right? After that debut on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think my takes on Cargill are pretty clear, but like, you know, you don't jump off a sinking ship to hop on a sinking ship.
I like Marina Shafir. I think she's shown some things in the dark elevation universe that made me happy, but whoever gave production notes to her on this, I just think they set themselves up for failure. Let me explain what I mean. When she was part of, as you so deftly put it, Fight and Play in NXT, she had personality. She had something even compared to like Jessamyn Duke. She had something.
Oh yeah, she definitely was the compelling one compared to Jessamyn.
One there.
Yeah.
She comes out Wednesday, and I think the notes were look stoic or look angry. But she came out there and she looked bored to me. She came out there in a hoodie. She just kind of looked. She rubbed her hands like she was nervous, which was a telltale sign. She walked down, and I think they had given her the notes to be Dean Malenko, to be the ice woman, so to speak, while she was doing this wrestling match. And it did not come off at all to me. You had the baddie section over there heckling her, which now included Kira Hogan and Red Velvet. Take your victory lap on that one, Chris. Red Velvet's now officially a heel, I think. But at the end of the night, I mean, Sky Blue was not the opponent to do it with. I think Sky Blue actually got a little bit too much offense, to be honest with you here. I would have also taken a mid-card heel and destroyed her, as opposed to a mid-card babyface to destroy here. If we're building up Marina Shafir as the problem and possibly the babyface to beat the heel, the still very heel, despite some of the face presentation, Jade Cargill, I think Marina Shafir needed to do that.
That was a huge mistake. I mean, really, like the way they've been building up Shafir, just the size discrepancy between Shafir and Cargill, Shafir being the new person, Cargill on a winning streak. Shafir comes off as the underdog, clearly. So, like, it would have made a lot more sense and frankly would have been more impactful for her to bump off a mid-card heel, as you said, above, like, the stature of the Bunny. Not quite at Serena Deeb's level.
Layla Hirsch?
Layla Hirsch would be a good one. Yeah. Actually, Hirsch wouldn't be a bad one. Where Hirsch comes in, thinks that she's going to have Shafir's number. Maybe
murder
even tries.
And just yeah. Do murder death.
And just gets obliterated. Yeah.
Yes. And then that's how you do a debut. And then it's like, oh crap. Now there's doubt in my head. But now we have the baddie section. I think now they have to follow through on the celebration with the green Lamborghinis and dancers and stuff. But I wouldn't one belt Marina Shafir right now. I'm thinking what they have to do now, if there were any plans to do this, is use Marina Shafir to debut whoever is going to take the belt off of Jade Cargill and ruins the celebration.
So here's the move I would do. I think I would actually have Serena Deeb be this person who gets the belt off of Jade Cargill, get it onto someone who can like regularly work and like work longer form matches. And now that you have this Shafir, thing going on here, the misbooking and the miscasting here, it's going to result in Cargill being perceived as the good guy.
Do you do it as a Jade turn though? That Deeb comes in and is so vicious and just does so many bad things that Jade Cargill has to turn babyface? Because the problem here is that Serena Deeb's in a feud already with one of your hottest babyfaces in the women's division.
And Cargill now has the baddie section. So, like, as I'm saying this out loud, I'm second-guessing myself. They've really written themselves into a corner here because Cargill has the schmarmy male attorney worm. The baddie section has all of the trappings of a heel, and yet every so often AEW likes to kind of like baby her in certain contexts. And Shafir,
look, she's a mother, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and Shafir is like a lousy baby face here, and this is a lousy baby face presentation.
Yes,
and this match is being billed as a really important match for Cargill, which that's great. If you've got a baby face who you'd really love to see spoil the party for Jade Cargill, but Jade Cargill's not someone who's been so petulant and so awful and so cheating that you don't want to see her have her all important 30th victory.
Yeah.
And isn't someone who you'd want to see defeat her who you think is deserving.
Allow me to address the people who are now screaming at the podcast that it's obvious what they're going to do. And yeah, I'm aware of it. Kira Hogan and Red Velvet are going to probably screw Marina Shafir out of this match. Correct?
Yeah, that's very likely.
And then we get a Black Excellence stable like that. And people love it, I think. I do. I mean, people wanted to watch. I think it's a good idea, too, quite frankly, given some of the press of late from AEW. I think it's a very, very...
So then I guess Jay just drops Smart Mark Sterling, and then I guess Cargill, Velvet, and Hogan aren't heels, but are in fact baby faces.
No, they're all heels. This is a heel stable, and Sterling sticks with them.
Okay, so it's a heel Black Excellence stable.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm
just gonna say, like, will the crowd go along with that? Like I don't know that the crowd will the crowd boo that reliably?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Right? That's because if you've been pushing for that, and this is what you want, you're finally given it.
Now it's a heel thing.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I had not thought about that, but man, that is an interesting move, isn't it? To heel. Heal all of your African-American females, although that's how you would debut an Athena if you're going to do that, too, possibly. Although then people will complain sometimes. Some will complain, not everybody. Some will say, oh, great, we're getting more Black women on the screen, and this is great. And then, you know, that addresses the problems that some people had. But on the other hand, it's also very, very Vince in putting all the minorities together in one feud.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think this may answer some questions and create new ones.
Yes. Sometimes when you solve problems, you have in turn created new ones. It is your turn, sir.
Okay. Well, I guess then, let me see what else. I guess we'll go to NXT. NXT is just increasingly a boring show to watch, isn't it? Solo Sikoa, Cameron Grimes was interesting because it just seems like the crowd has really soured on Cameron Grimes. Like, they just don't love him anymore. And it's not like he was really working heel or anything like that. It's just like people were sort of into Solo Sikoa. They went, given the choice of two baby faces, they softly healed Cameron Grimes.
Well, it's interesting because Sikoa is making all the illusions that he's an Uso, which he is a problem. And that you combine that with the issue of what they did with Cameron Grimes when he won the title, was it making him a crying, weepy baby face? And I don't think people want that. I think people want him to be more of the to the moon guy. They want him to
the doing it for his dad thing really completely missed with everyone, didn't it? It had no resonance with the audience.
None. And because people got over that quick. Quit crying about your baby, about your daddy. Giving you the redneck rich thing. And I think that because that's what connected in the first place. When you make that emotional swerve right there, a little tough to do, I think. And you know, the WWE does subtle emotional stuff very well, Chris.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Cameron Grimes father story was really playing on all of the heartstrings. Broke all of them.
You want me to?
It's your turn.
Okay, cool. We can go back to NXT with anything you want after that. But let's address the elephant in the room. Tony Khan telling everybody to set their DVRs for an overrun on AEW Dynamite. Something big's gonna happen, Chris. We got to set our half hour extra because
something big did happen, buddy.
Big is going down. And what we get is look, don't get me wrong. Loved me some Minoru Suzuki, Samoa Joe smacking the crap out of each other. Hose me on that. Can watch that all day. But in the post-match, it was a Ring of Honor angle with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and introducing Satnam Singh. I believe that's how you pronounce the word. X. Draft pick of the Dallas Mavericks training in the AEW training center or whatever they're calling it now. 7'3", basically put on a vice grip on Joe. And that's how they ended a rather hot AEW Dynamite show. Other than the women's match, that show was white hot with the tag team title match, which was pretty damn good, I thought. The Punk Penta match, which everybody loved. I'm trying to think of the other matches that were on there offhand because I don't have the lineup in front of me. But all the matches were fantastic, and they end with this turd in the punch bowl, Chris.
I was baffled that they were like, we need to go over. If anything, they need to slow down what they're doing on Dynamite. They need to have like the open... They don't need to have a white hot opening match like CM Punk and Penta the first match. I think the first match can be something a little more pedestrian every week. They've been doing really, really strong opener, you know, get in your seat sort of matches to start the show. Other than the women's match,
MJF and MJF and Sean Dean, which was a great angle.
I thought that was really well done. That was really fun. That was really fun.
Let's talk about that for a bit. Let's talk about the greatness of. And I know they mentioned they probably overdid it a little bit. It would have been nice if they had backed off a bit on mentioning that the security guard had lost his shirt. Because let me tell you something. This reveal of Wardlow. Just walking up a few steps, removing the mask and the hat, when he's probably been standing there for the last 15 minutes, in my opinion. One of the better ones they've done. And Wardlow, God bless him, he has the acting chops. He is pulling off the anger part. He's pulling off the cocky part. And I thought the way that they got the count out on MJF was clever, too, with just an insane amount of security guys to the point where he couldn't get back to the ring. That was clever too. This is a pure pro wrestling type angle type match, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think this is great. This what they're doing with Sean Dean right now is Leon Ruff done correctly. This is making Sean Dean look good. It's putting him in an angle with a main event pillar of the company where he is getting a favorable light, but you're not actually taking away any of the heat off of MJF. And like, You can have MJF beat Sean Dean, but you also never actually need to have MJF, quote unquote, get his heat back from Sean Dean, because all of these wins are coming with an asterisk, but he's a baby face. We know he's an underdog, and a win's a win. And the crowd likes being able to chuckle at the heel getting played by the rules for a change.
Yeah. And I think you can eventually, if you want to, you can build Sean Dean up for a TNT title match and beat him then. I think that's what you do with all these big time wins, is look at his record. He's growing. And then he gets the quote unquote good loss.
Or you can have MJF cost him that match.
That could be, you know what? That's a great idea too. I'll get back to Satnam Singh in a second, because I want to talk about Tony Khan on Busted Open Radio on today or yesterday. I can't remember which one, but anyways, the sixth man between the Jericho Appreciation Society and Eddie Kingston and Proud and Powerful. Hour one match, but boy, that is pure from my childhood. That's the pure end of Jim Crockett 1 hour show in syndication type of thing, where you end with the heels, the horsemen beating down the good guys, and just we'll see you next week. I love the stupid Matt Menard for 25 or what was it for three weeks,
leader in sports entertainment.
That's just a perfect little cherry on top of this gimmick. I enjoyed that match for what it was. It was a match for, you know, it was a TV main event. Unfortunately, it was in hour one, but it's still a TV style main event of old. And I dug that too.
Yeah. I thought it was a fine match. I don't love the Jericho match, but I am enjoying seeing 2.0 getting some burn, and you know, it's fine.
I actually think the people getting short shrift in all this is Proud and Powerful, because I'm not impressed with Proud and Powerful in this, and I haven't been in this feud or anything. I haven't been really impressed with them since I guess that thing they did with the Best Friends. You remember that match?
Yeah.
The plunder match all over the place.
I think that them being Eddie Kingston's buddy rather than Eddie Kingston being their buddy.
Yes.
Has hurt them. You
nailed it.
Yeah. Jericho having promos with Kingston rather than having promos with Santana and Ortiz, who are the ones who legitimately have the beef with Jericho and the more intimate beef, has hurt them.
Now, Tony Khan did bury, going unnamed, but he did bury somebody in the back who pitched the idea of Satnam Singh getting the lights out, lights on treatment. Said it was somebody who'd been doing this for about 30 years producing and came up with the idea, and he didn't say no. I mean, he didn't say no.
That's ridiculous. We only do that with Aleister Black, the House of Black, and occasionally Penta. You can't do that too often.
And Sabu, and no, actually, it's funny. Somebody brought up, Jim Valley came on our show. Jim Valley from Wrestling Observer was on my show Wednesday that I do. And he goes, there's too many people dressing in black and white on these shows, and we need to change up the color schemes a lot. And I don't disagree, because between Proud and Powerful, the House of Black, Danhausen, Penta, you know, we have a lot of Sting, Darby Allin. We have a lot of black and white characters.
So I think we should start with Sting, probably. I'm sorry, Jeff. The gimmick's getting a little bit stale, don't you think?
He needs to be Surfer Sting from now on.
I know. It's time for something a little bit fresh.
That's the one guy who gets to keep that. Everybody else can change. But yeah. If you got to turn out the lights, you got to get a roar from the crowd when you turn those lights back on. It can't just be, here's our new Indian prospect.
He's tall.
He's tall. That's such a...
No, I mean, what this needed to be, especially given that he's just not a known name like that, is he needed to come in and dominate like Adam Cole, Adam Page, a number of top level guys simultaneously. Like you have a 6-man tag of, you know, MJF, I'm just going to name people, Darby Allin, Adam Cole, Adam Page. And it's kind of like not clear who's going to win this match. All of a sudden, this guy shows up and he just obliterates all six of them. And that's how you end the show. Like the show ends with this guy impressively obliterating all of these people. The last man standing being Paige. Paige squares off against this guy, and even Paige goes down, and this guy ends up just standing super tall. Again, all of this has to be done impressively, and this guy was the absolute wrong vehicle for that.
Even better, the cherry on top was, usually commentary goes, who? Oh my God, who's that? You know, just feigning ignorance or anything. Tony Schiavone, first, I know who that is.
It's Veer Mahan.
It's Satnam Singh. And everybody's like, who the F is Satnam Singh, Tony? Oh, he's a prospect over the, and this becomes the action movie exposition. Oh yes, he's the star prospect over at the AEW Training Center. He's been training over there with Sanjay Dutt. I started to howl in my seat. I'm like, oh, of course Tony knows who that is.
For weeks we've been seeing these Satnam is coming promos.
It's the exact opposite of the Butcher and Blade premiere when Excalibur goes, that's the Butcher and the Blade. And everyone's like, who are these guys right now? I just... Oh, Tony Schiavone. Oh, good bless him. I believe it's your turn. I've taken up enough time.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like, let's pivot back to NXT since we've basically done Dynamite at this point. Sure. Ikki Manjiro. That's all I wanted to say. Ikki Manjiro. He had a match against Von Wagner. Von Wagner's like nothing.
He's a Japanese guy who wrestles in a jacket, Chris.
And it gets disrespected. I feel really bad for Kushida. Like the way Kushida just gets tossed aside by Wagner backstage. I'm like, damn, dude. I remember when you were something.
Well, this helps me pivot into my next point, because it was a point also brought up by one Jim Valley. I want to bring it up here because I think it's interesting to talk about. And also interesting to talk about in the prism that we just talked about with Jade Cargill. Ikki Manjiro and Kushida are Japanese wrestlers on NXT television. Wheeler Yuta is a wrestler of Japanese heritage on AEW. That in and of itself right now is refreshing, I think. They haven't given him any kind of wacky Asian-themed gimmick in any ways. He is just a wrestler named Wheeler Yuta who happens to be Asian.
Yeah, other than the use of Romaji to spell out Yuta, yeah.
Touche. Let me sandwich the Cody question with this. Are on week two of the Yuta reimagination, are they being successful with it right now?
I'm gonna say Kenny, my favorite philosopher, might be onto something with this one. I think that this needs to be is about the education of Wheeler Yuta. Yeah. And so it may miss on a couple of weeks. And I think even if it does miss, you can write into those misses a little bit and figure out ways to refine him. Like the story is about educating him. And the beauty of that kind of story is that it does allow for things to not always click from week to week to week. This was not a clicking week for me, but I also wouldn't say the project's doomed or anything like that at this point.
Right. Valley made the same point. He says it's probably gonna be a slow, I can't remember what Japanese wrestler he said it was, but it's gonna be a lot like, he says this is gonna be a slow education. So don't expect him to be a killer in 1 week. This is gonna go over time and eventually he's gonna get there. Now, that being said,
Friday, what if he turns into the great Yuta?
No. I made that joke too. We should never do that. Friday Wheeler Yuta, far stronger than Wednesday Wheeler Yuta with that. My man needs to get some bass in his voice Wheeler, if he's going to talk and be angry and mean and stuff, because otherwise you're just, oh, that's so cute. Wheeler, you just being meany. I liked him doing the ground wrestling, the mat wrestling, and I liked that he won the match with the old Tim Horner victory roll with the bridge. I thought, as opposed to a move or something. I still think it's somewhat out of place in a combat club, but, you know, because he's a little aerial and he's a little flippy-do type of guy. But if this is going to be a slow story, it can't be too slow. It can't be Julia Hart pace, necessarily, I don't think, in terms of giving us story beats. Now, you can take as long as you're taking with the Julia Hart thing, but the problem with the Julia Hart thing is they've done no story beats in it other than adding a little grayscale makeup. Like it's like the mist is spreading on her for some reason, type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the infection spreading on Julia Hart's storyline is not a good template for anything to be running through right now.
Anything else from you on the Lazy River?
Let me see here. Dakota Kai and Mandy Rose was. Look, I mean, at least Kai's the right type of person for Rose to be going up against.
Dakota Kai needs main roster money now. I'm sorry. She's been the best thing, best wrestler in the women's division in NXT, with the possible exception of Io Shirai, for the last 4 years in that division, I think now. And they've not given her a title to hold more than an hour. They've given her 3 different character changes. They're never going to bring her up to the main roster, it seems. They always use her as cannon fodder in the Royal Rumble. I want her to be paid, at least. That's all I want. Don't get me wrong. I love the Wendy Choo story. I think it's going to be adorable. They're going to eventually win the tag titles because there's nobody else to put them on other than the Brazzers storyline that's going on with the other women's tag team right now. That is in Toxic Attraction.
Oh, and you're not even talking about Nikita Lyons and Lash Legends, which is like more of like a TMZ sort of storyline.
Yes, that was interesting.
And like, look, Pretty Deadly as tag champions, they are the right type of tag team for this company. They had a very successful run in NXT UK, and like this is, frankly, a success story of a team that you and I have watched grow on NXT UK. Yes, I do remember the show.
They've been very improved since coming up to the
roster. Improved. Yeah, they've just steadily improved over the last few years here. And I'm happy for them. I think they're the perfect foils for the Creed brothers to go up against, too.
Because everybody wants to see the Creed brothers kill the Pretty Boys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I think also you could also have a mini feud if we don't want to go directly to the Creed brothers beating them, we could have Pretty Deadly beat the Grizzled Young Veterans as some sort of British pride type thing or UK pride type thing. I love the Grizzled Young Veterans.
But Zach Gibson can talk himself into being a temporary babyface as quickly as he can talk himself into being a heel. It's like one walk down the aisle.
Yeah, if we wanted to make him baby and we wanted to baby him into that, or we can leave him heels. I mean, I think we're leaving the Creed brothers still as heels, even though people cheer the Diamond Mine somewhat. But I think we can do that. My last note on the Lazy River that I have is Jerry Lawler has come back while Corey is on vacation. Some people might say he hasn't missed a beat. Why not use Nigel McGuinness, who is doing NXT UK from his home? I believe he's in Florida. Bring him in. Bring one of the young guys in there. See what you got. Maybe add him to the McAfee podcast, because McAfee has commitments on Fridays occasionally too. And he can just fill in there, or he could heel on McAfee occasionally and McAfee can respond to it. But look, if you have underused resources in the WWE right now, to me, Nigel McGuinness is top of that list.
Yeah. Look, Jerry Lawler.
You up there?
No, you put me to sleep with Jerry Lawler talk. he's so He's Jerry Lawler. You can say he hasn't missed a beat. I think another way of saying that is that he hasn't still changed stinks. A lick. He still stinks. The dad jokes are now like grandpa jokes, yes. As in like, hey, grandpa, no, don't do that. No, that's not funny anymore. We don't find that one so funny.
It's gone from dirty old man to creepy old man. Like that guy Carmella's not on the show.
Yes, you wince like when he says certain jokes now. It's just not funny. It's not pleasant.
Speaking of which, we'll see what happens with Liv Morgan, because that tag title match was changed all of a sudden midstream. Become a singles match where she loses to Sasha Banks. They're breaking up this team of Liv and Rhea, aren't they? I think they're going through with the Edge plan, right?
I guess so. I mean...
That's how you explain why she's not on the show that week. Right?
This will be fun to include in WWE 23 as a potential storyline in like a bonus pack.
What do we think of this Edge storyline anyways with Damian Priest? Because don't get me wrong, I think Damian Priest is fantastic.
Oh, but this is such a demotion. No. Oh, come on, Jeff. Year over year. Damian Priest was a stock, Damian Priest was at like a peak with the Bad Bunny pairing. And yes, now a year later, he's a henchman for Edge.
Yes. Well, I mean, this entire Edge thing is derivative because, I mean, he's copying the entrances of the Undertaker. He's doing the mood lighting of Bray Wyatt. And his gimmick is actually like Seth Rollins' Messiah gimmick. It's all wrapped.
Damian Priest is like Two-Face if Two-Face was a henchman.
Edge is the Serpentor of WWE characters. It's just different bits from different places, and now he's a guy. Yeah. That's all I got for my Lazy River. If you have anything else, let me know.
I don't know that I have anything else. I'm good to rock here.
Cool. So follow me at Crap Game 13. You follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, the flagship Music of the Mat, 5-star match game. Open the voice gate. Any kind of wrestling that you are interested in, we probably have a podcast about that available on all podcast platforms. You can listen to me weekly, my hot takes about Dynamite on the Dynamite Show over on the Fight Game Network, patreon.com/fightgamemedia, I believe is the link for that. Chris also has a Patreon. It is called Don't Worry About the Government. He's going to tell you about that now.
Yeah, patreon.com/DWATG is where you can go to subscribe to the Don't Worry About the Government Patreon. You can comment and like participate in all the comments on, there's not like a ton, but like people are like actually commenting on some of the shows. So you can go over there and comment on it, and you get the shows early. You get the video versions of the shows, or you can just subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and take a listen to the show. It's coming out once, maybe twice a month right now. So go ahead and check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. The name of the show is Don't Worry About the Government. And Hawkins, I've got one thing to say to you. Veer Mahan.